Well, thank you for this opportunity for me to give a talk about some observations from Big Bear Solar Observatory. It's about the changes of magnetic field associated with flares, and most of those big flares also have halo CMEs associated. And I know there's always a question about the correlation between flare and CME, but for X-class flares, if be realistic, it's very unusual for X-class flare don't have a CME. So the understanding of the field changes associated with big flares, I think, would probably provide some hint to the study of CME, triggering of the CME. Okay, so next. I usually like to give a summary of my talk first. And so I summarize it, and then I go to the detail of the talk. So here I list the six events, the all class X class flares. What we found is the leading magnetic flux has a rapid increase after flare.
Even the leading polarity.
Leading polarity, right? Not in the, not necessarily in a leading position, leading polarity, right? And following polarity will either decrease slightly or unchanged. By reading those two lines, you immediately got some trouble, right? Since in violation of the delta dot B equals to zero. So, but anyway, I will describe in more detail and also possible explanation. Okay, so that's for six events. And for the three events, it clearly shows the new sunspot area, so that all those changes are very impulsive. I shouldn't say impulsive, it's a term rapid. That means time scale is minutes. It's not the long-term evolution of the active region. And this change, the third item, there are three active region or three flares. It shows the new sunspot area in the form of a penumbra. Okay. And finally, we offer some explanation, the emergence of a very inclined flux loop, or could be an expansion of sunspot, P spot in this case, associated with the flare CMEs. Okay. Okay, so I just give you a brief introduction of the research in this area. I know there are many studies on the evolution of the magnetic fields associated with the flares. And my impression is in photospherical level, usually don't detect any changing. It's very hard to see the change. The changes, of course, in the corona, that's a lot. From Yoko movies or any movies, you can see the structure, that changes a lot. And but in photosphere, there are almost no detectable changes. Like in this paper, I study like 20 M-class flares. Essentially, there's no change for any of them to watch the evolution of that. And also, this paper study one big flare. And in the last previous solar cycle, we studied like five or six flares with vector magnetograms. We saw some surprising results. We saw the shear increase after flare in photospherical level. The magnetic shear is just the angle between the potential field and the measured field. That's defined as a shear. Then in some that there are a couple of papers, you know, including one paper from the Marshall Space Flight Center. That's actually in their Christmas card. You also can see the shear increase after the flare in the core region of the flare. And more recently, there are a few papers in this research area. One is Kosovichev and Zharkova. Okay. Zharkova. Okay. In that paper, they use MBI data. They studied one of the big flare, I forgot which day, they found two things. Now, one is there is a sudden decrease of magnetic flux after flare in some area. They marked a few sub areas, and this flux decrease is permanent. That means after flare, the flux is gone. It's gone. And that done, I mean, they clearly saw the flux cancellation in those areas. So that showed. And also, the another kind, they call magnetic transient. There are some changes, decrease of flux for a little time, and then restore to the original value. But that, actually, there's some argument about that. In this paper, they saw this transient probably is true due to a bombardment of an electron, of the high energy electron, although it didn't give a very detailed explanation. But I thought, also by look at some very old observations by Alan Patterson and Hal Ziering, those transients are due to a line emission. I mean, sometimes called line emission, and more general case, the line weakening. In a flare, you're going to have weakening of the line. That way, you're going to lose some magnetic signal. But anyway, that's not much relevant to our study here, because this transient is during the flare. We like to discard any observations just during the flare, because the line profile is so complicated. So we don't want to argue if that's what's the physics of this transient.
So you're saying what they mistake intensity variation with field
strength? Right, because MDI data, it's not a one spectral line. They have it's not just a one position. They have several positions. But I still don't think that's going to have a good spectral resolution to measure the field during the flare. But anyway, I'm not sure. And there are some old papers. So one of the events already in our one out of six is from the older one from the previous cycle. It's in this paper in 93. We saw the sudden flux increase after flare. And there's a new paper by Tom Spirock, and also saw a very substantial flux increase. So six events I discussed will include those two. That means four new events. Okay. And there's another subject, which I don't want to list, probably many tens of the papers, on the general evolution of the slow, gradual flux evolution associated with flare CMEs. Like many people found the flux emergence, those are in typical time scale of a day or hours, and flux cancellation. That's just a long-term trend. That probably they are associated with flares. So this way can give you a very long list. Since people study many events, they think flux emergence is important, and flux cancellation is important, the shear flow is important, just many different physical processes will give you some physical explanation of solar flares. But that's fine. I mean, the thing I want to discuss is more transient, or not transient, more rapid than this gradual evolution of the magnetic field. Okay, so next thing. So observation, I mean, I just simply describe what we use. Probably some of you know, we upgraded our magnetogram system. Now it's a new digital vector magnetogram system at BBSO. At this stage, we're still using the Leo filter, but very soon there will be a Fabry Pro, so you can tune several wavelengths. But the data we use is a fixed wavelength, so there are some limitations on it. So this is a primary data source. There's a secondary data source, it's MDI magnetograms. In some cases, we do a verification. That's one case we only had a MDI magnetogram. This is as a vector. This is on a line of sight. Okay. And we have high resolution and full disk H-alpha observations to locate the flares, and also to monitor flare morphology. Then we use HXT, and also some cases we use a ghost soft X-ray to locate a time, the timing, exact timing of the solar flares. Okay, yeah. Okay, so here's a list of those six events. And as I said, this is a very old one. We put this one here, it's because it's a previous solar cycle. And you know, when solar cycle changes, the definition of leading and following polarity will reverse. So that's why we included one here. And then all other five are from last year, 2001. And here are the magnitude. And it's only one, it's very close to LIM, 75 degree. So that's one study by Spirok. And also it's the largest one in the record, X20. So this is just a general description of those six events.
You
look
like you get three in the northern hemisphere, three in the southern hemisphere.
Is that right? I didn't know. Well, actually four in the...
Four.
But this is equivalent to the southern hemisphere because it's the last cycle, right?
Okay.
And this is the one outside the six. There's just it's a paper in 92. We saw something fairly strange. It's we pick up the flare core. And we study the so-called weighted mean shear angle. It's a shear angle, but weighted by field strength. Because if you don't weight it by field strength, then the weak field area, those angles are so messy.
Can you define the shear angle?
I just do a simple case.
There's a light switch over there.
There's a light switch.
You can see
to the left.
On the wall.
Oh, okay. This shear has some limitation because we don't have a 3D. This is basically a 2D. It's more valuable. It's more reliable if a region is near the disk center. So suppose you have a positive and negative. This is a magnetic neutral line. The potential field will be crossing like this, right? The potential field can be calculated based on the line of sight magnetogram. That's the existing code we can calculate. Then you have measured one, and this angle is called a theta. It's shear angle.
How reliable is that measurement?
I thought calculation is pretty accurate. The measurement is not accurate. Yeah.
When you do the calculation, you have to pick a height for the field line to.
We use the base, since our measurement is on the photosphere,
yeah.
So our calculation also get projected to the photosphere.
But in order to draw that line for the potential field, you have to pick a field line.
Yeah.
So how high up does it go?
The field line, the one we use, is used very low. This field line can go, they really depend on the extrapolation.
I don't think you pick a field line, you just look at the vectors. But in order to calculate the potential field, you have to extrapolate the field into the corona.
Yeah, but you can use the potential field to figure out a transverse field at the photosphere.
Yeah, you can you get a height. You're a complete
I guess it's really bearing down exactly on this question. Exactly how do you define it? You use the tangent vectors at the surface?
At the surface,
to define the angle?
Right, because our measurement is only at the surface.
Okay.
Right.
Of course, it would be nice if we have all 3D vector, right?
Okay. So you don't use any 3D information?
No, only 2D projected on surface.
Okay, only to get the tangential component
right.
of the potential.
Right. So that means every point you have this shear angle, then you just weighted. That's weighted shear angle. So that means the strong field area will have more weight into your calculation. Okay.
By field strength, by line intensity. Are you weighed by field strength?
It's by transverse field strength, since that's purely due to the measurement error. Because the weaker the field, the larger error you will have in the shear angle.
But also, you can define the field lines a lot better if you have stronger emission coming in.
You have stronger emission?
Emission, yeah.
Emission, in a photosphere, unless it's in inside sunspot, the emission about everywhere about same.
Same.
Yeah, but in the sunspot area, that's the area is very, very difficult to measure anyway.
But it's certainly a strong linear polarization signal.
Yeah.
It has less noise on it.
Right, right, right.
Linear polarization.
That's just the reason we do weighted. Okay. Okay, so this one shows the after the flare, there is a jump in some magnetic shear. That was the first time we reported this very strange result.
And this is a weighted mean over the entire active.
We draw a box in the neutral line near the flare. In other area, actually, we didn't see any changes. So that's why we make so-called shear movie. I will show you a couple of shear movies. You can see the enhancement of shear is very localized.
And is that where the flare occurs?
Yeah, that's where flare occurs. Okay, but this is an older result. We have some new result.
For sure, the next one.
Yeah, next one. And this one is one of the six, but I say it's the previous solar cycle. That's in the APJ letter in 93. And this is scan the picture. So the first, maybe we start from here. This is, at that time, we didn't care if the leading or following. So it's just a positive flux. It obviously has a jump in a window we measured.
So now but this is line of sight flux?
This line of sight flux.
Okay, so we're not talking about sheared magnetic fields anymore.
No, and here is the so-called magnetic shear. That's transverse. You can see a big jump.
Okay.
Actually, you can see the line just switch to from about 45 degree to about 90 degree. And then this is, we call the umbra area. This is a way to measure how, in a small field of view, how dark it is. If you have a more umbra area, that means you have more umbra or sunspot area. Then you probably know why there is a dip, because it's a flare, right? That's a very good indicator of the flare. And so this is a first clear case that there's some new sunspot come out very rapidly. Okay, so this is one of the, but at that time we just call positive. Negative flux at that time was very difficult to measure. The positive flux is a Plagi region. The negative flux is in the sunspot. We didn't see much change, but we didn't show it. We don't know increase or decrease. So that's the first one. Okay. I'm sorry for this scanned image. It's like half hour from here to here. I lost all my, computer file when I work with HAL. So if I need anything, I had to scan.
Okay.
All right. And this is a more recent one, just a paper accepted by APJ. It's done by a graduate student. This is actually an X20 flare. He put an X17, and this one is close to LIM. So it's very hard to interpret the data, but we just show the data. And this is the time from here to here. It's like 200 minutes, the total time. And it's a pre-flare. Then during the flare, there is some dip. We think that's due to the line weakening or line emission. So we don't care about this part. That's total flux. This is, I don't know if it's positive. Oh, this is positive, this is negative, but this is a leading flux. This is a following flux. You can see basically following flux did not change. I mean, there's some change during the flare. That's transient. And the restore to original value.
And here you use the vector field to calculate a vertical.
Sorry, this I'm sorry, for this day we only had a line of sight. And that's a limitation.
Oh, what? Line
of sight. Yeah.
Trying to calculate flux.
Just a line of sight of flux.
Line of sight.
Yeah, right.
The region that's almost on the limb.
Yeah, that's almost along the limb. So that means you are measuring part of the transverse.
Mostly.
Most of the transverse. But anyway, you can see that one of the leading flux increase for the active region increased like 5%. So this is a substantial increase. So So this one was, we checked both Big Bear and MDI data, show the exactly same thing. And so that motivated us to check all the data we have for the year of 2001 to see what happened. Okay, so that, let's look at the...
I hear you couldn't measure the shear, right?
You cannot. This one cannot make the, measure the shear. So now the next one is October 19, is the X1.6 flare. And this is the flux calculation area. We feel comfortable just only include this area. This is basically in the core of the flare. And also if we run the movie, we see most of changes in this small box. Since it's not in a sunspot, the flux calculations are usually more accurate. So it's not only because we avoid a sunspot. The primary reason is this is most of activity happen, and also most of flux changes happen. Okay, so let's show the next one. It's a movie. It should start by itself. No?
No, I can see the disk lights coming on. So I think,
yeah. Oh, okay. So this is a fairly nice two-ribbon flare. And you can see the core is in that area I draw. The flare started from here, then ribbon separate. And I mean, it's typical, not very unusual. And let's look at the next movie. It's I believe it's let's just show the second halo is this one. There are two halo events. The second one is associated with that flare. But we didn't study a detailed correlation, but we think that flare is associated with halo CME. You know. This is Lasker C3. It's a chronograph. Okay. So probably.
There's something falling in there. Is that
something? Oh, yeah. Oh, what is it?
It's the comet that
comet
the comet that caused the whole thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they see lots of these sun grazing comets, so maybe that's one of them.
Oh. Okay. Okay, so this is a line of sight magnetogram. Just pay attention to this area. Can see that there is some, you can kind of timing the flare. You see this. Like a darkling here is due to the transient. Then in this area, you can see that suddenly a new flux come out. It's just that was a box I draw. So in this area, then you can see there's some cancellation with the surrounding dark flux. That I will explain what the consequence is. But anyway, so maybe. Yeah, we can show the next movie, show this better. It should be a movie, okay. So here are the four panels. This is a white light. Now in the white light, you can see the flash, it's a flare. Then you can see after flare, there's dark area appeared in this area. In the darkening, this is the same thing I showed before. It's just an enhancement of the flux. This is a transverse field strength. And particularly look at this shear map. What is a shear map? The shear map is defined as a shear angle times the transverse field strength. It's the same point as we do so-called weighted shear angle. So then just look at this point. Can you see that suddenly there's some... This is a very noisy map because shear is, it's kind of differential term you're talking about. And but you can see most of area didn't change much except this area. Can you see? This probably shows most impossible change.
Yeah.
So anyway, so this just shows the new sunspot area, new flux, and new shear. Okay, so next. This is just a way to plot the transverse field. And also demonstrate our vector magnetogram work fine. This is a sunspot, usually a radial structure. You can see sunspot structure didn't change. The only change is in this area. You can see longer bars and more parallel to the neutral line. The dark thing is a neutral line. This is one polarity in the line of sight. This blue is the other polarity. And so in that box, little, little box near the core of the flare, you can see the obvious stronger transverse field and stronger shear. That is just another way to demonstrate that movie. Next. So this is the plot to show the measurement of all the quantities in that box. The first one is the magnetic flux. That's the positive flux and negative flux, and we figure out that this is a leading flux. This is a following flux based on the hemisphere. And then you see the following flux didn't change much, and its leading flux increased substantially. And it was kind of straight, and then changed over in about 1 hour.
So is this close to the limb or close to
No, this is near disc center, right. Okay.
And this is just the flux within that box.
Yeah, in that box, right. And to reflect what we saw in the transverse field also increased. Also, you can see it's pretty much an impulsive change. And this weighted shear angle, that's most the impulsive one. In the movie, you also demonstrated there's a jump about 10 degrees.
And when you're talking about a weighted shear angle that's close to 70 degrees, there yeah. would be a lot of angles that are greater than 90.
Actually, for this one, you can see almost all the lines in that region is close to 90 degrees. There are not many points that are less than 90 degrees.
Right. There must be many that are more than 90.
Actually, this is so far this is a limitation of our study. We figure out maybe we show the previous one.
More than 90 degrees, they're crisscrossing the.
No, just if you.
Yeah,
magnetic fields. One is potential, and the other is the transverse component measured.
Yeah.
And they're off by more than 90. And where I was going was I was going to ask you about the details of your.
Oh yeah, right. That's actually a very good question.
Often uses the potential
right.
magnetic field.
For we only did our first order ambiguity to resolve the ambiguity. That means to use the potential field as the reference. And for this one, I think we are pretty happy with it because you can see those lines. You basically this is like you cannot check by computer. It's just based on your experience to see if I think
Sorry,
it's.
You use the potential field to resolve.
Yeah, right. So that means you don't have a point that's above 90 degrees.
Uh-huh.
This is a tricky part. We could try to use other methods to get more detailed one. But for this particular event, if you reverse any of them, the 180 degrees, that means you just reverse it, will make it unreasonable. So that's why.
For the people who aren't experienced with magnetographs, point out that the measurements of the magnetic field vector have this 180 degree ambiguity problem. And so you have to, well, it's a difficult problem to put
yeah,
the arrow
right.
in the arrow. Yeah. That's something that's.
Right.
Kind of an art form, and not.
Yeah, this is the very.
Can you explain here? Green arrows mean
the direction of the transverse field. Yeah.
The strength of the field is proportional to the length.
To length, right? That be.
Do they all appear the same length?
They are different. I mean, it's very hard to draw them, but they are different. Here it will be longer near the sunspot penumbra. And also there's a cutoff. If it's below certain cutoff, we didn't draw it.
Oh, okay. So that explains why you have these arrows not everywhere by itself.
Yeah, that's it.
So then what is the difference between before flare and after
flare? If you look very carefully, you will see first, you got more bars above the cutoff now, you can see. It was not the case in other areas. The second thing is like they are now tend to be more aligned with this dark scene. This is a neutral line. It's the B line of sight equals to zero line.
Mm-hmm. So can you explain new emerging flux in this case, where is it?
It's you can see, also you can see, it's just in this area, right?
Nothing to do with this dark spot on the
left. The dark actually getting, we calculated its flux decreased somehow. So for the, and also we know why they decrease. This white one pushing, and so there are some cancellation. We saw those cancellation.
This is northern hemisphere?
Is that northern? I forgot. It's the second one. Probably I will check if it's a northern one.
Do you want me to go back?
It's not that important. No, okay.
Okay. Okay. Maybe we can...
go on the next one?
Yeah, go to the next one. And here, we also just add, we show, instead of using umbra area, I just use the mean intensity in the box. Now you can see there's some drop of the mean intensity, that means new sunspot coming out. So this is a way to demonstrate it's a new sunspot, new flux, both transverse and longitude. And this one, of course, has some limitation about the 180 degree ambiguity. Okay. And then there's another event. We concentrate again in the flaring neutral line. Include a little bit of sunspot, but most of the things will happen here. So that's this one we didn't have high resolution one. This is from our full disk data. Yeah.
It went black.
It went black. So probably had to use like FA to.
No.
Just
went black.
Just went black.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, it's just,
but it doesn't matter, it's just a flare, so another flare. Okay, so go ahead to see if we have just another Java 2 ribbon.
Did you have
was this a link to a movie in a
different file? No, it should be in that directory.
Because you have to invoke the display again. You have three options sometimes, three levels.
Okay, well, let's try.
Disappear from your screen then. The other option is to, let's not disable
other iteration. It's okay. I mean, it's just another one, like the one you saw, but not at the good quality.
I think so.
Okay. Maybe go to next. Yeah, the one you already saw, so.
Now I've lost my own screen.
Yeah.
Okay, well, except my computer has died.
You didn't do it like yourself there.
Let's see, let's try.
Now, while he's doing, maybe I can ask a question.
Yeah, sure.
Now, the idea here is that the shear is produced by emergence of new flux someplace else and then their new connection, or is there more motion on the foot point or something?
We think it's, I draw some cartoon. I think it's this.
I think I'm going to have to reboot.
Okay, that's okay. Just keep talking. It's one of the picture I will show is those fluxes are really inclined. That means not very vertical. They're basically very flat. Yeah, also sheared. When they come out, if you're not exactly at the disk center, you will see, well, that's why you only see the one polarity. If you have a flux come out very flat, suppose, let's see, suppose you have a polarity. Okay. It will be in one of the cartoon pictures. Suppose you have the normal sunspot emergence like this. You should have balanced the positive and negative come out. But if you observe it, it's from here. But if you have two other conditions combined, one is they are not exactly at the disk center. There's some distance from disk center. Like one of the cases, the extreme case, it's very far away from disk center. Let's just draw middle way. And if the sunspot come out with angle and also very flat, if in this case, if two conditions satisfy, I mean, then you will see, you only see flux in one polarity.
Longitudinal flux.
longitudinal flux will be in one polarity.
This is because you use the line of sight to calculate the flux.
So yeah, right.
The vertical field.
Right, right.
Because if you have a vector field, you should be able to calculate the vertical field.
Right, that's true.
There should be no imbalance in that. If you're seeing both ends of this loop come into view.
That's a problem. We don't see the both ends. I think the other ends is somewhere buried. We only can see one.
But I mean, when it first crosses the photosphere,
yeah.
It has to, both ends have to be close together.
Right. But we don't see that. So that's why we have another expression.
I don't think you can know unless you use a vertical field to calculate flux. If you use line of sight, you're going to get confused by the orientation, like the way you're drawing.
Yeah. I think that's right. And, for three of the events, we don't have the vector field. We only have the line of sight. So that's why we the only thing we can say is there is some component. They are very inclined. If they are not inclined like this, you will see the balance of the flux.
If a field line
looks like this, then even with the angle, you don't see the imbalance of flux. But only when they are very inclined, you will see an unbalanced flux. So that's a next I will, when the computer app show a couple of other events, but they basically show the same thing. One of the event is the we have the data from trace. You can see the white light movie. Actually, that's the only one I showed the last time here. It's the trace movie. Let's see where are we.
Let's see. So
could you turn off the light again,
please? Okay.
Let's go back to. Can we try skipping the movie?
Yeah. Try to skip the movie. Okay. You're not.
Yeah, we don't want to do that. So
okay.
Can you tell me where we were?
Oh, okay. Let me see. Where are we?
I think we were right on that.
Oh, yeah. We skipped this movie. I don't think we want to show this. This is another CME. You have a, maybe just show this direct picture. Start from here. I think a trace movie is small, so if we can show. Okay. So this is from trace white light. And also, if you see the movie next, you can see there's just a new penumbra come out. So that's why we think it's just there's a sudden, this is two flare ribbons. And this is basically the area we're interested in. That's in the flare neutral line. Maybe try to see the next. Just skip it. Just trust my word. Okay, that's a.
Yeah, just one block.
Okay, then go.
I'm gonna go to the next one.
Yeah. Okay. So this one, now the negative is the leading polarity, and the positive is following. And this is the, again, hard X-ray. So this one has a substantial decrease in the.
Yoko?
That's from HXD, yeah, from Yoko, right? And again, there's a positive, not a positive. This is actually negative. That's leading flux increase, line of sight. And but again, this region is not that close to the limb. So you can see the two. This one is increase, this one decrease. And the transverse field increases. And weighted shear angle has a sudden jump. It's very impossible. Then this intensity, it's basically flat before. Then after, you can see the dropping of the intensity. It's basically the same thing. And
so the penumbra is increasing very gradually here.
Now here it's more gradual than the other event, But the shear is more impulsive, I mean more rapid. But I think there is some cooling process. The flux come out. The shear afterward, there's some gradual decrease, but it's just a sudden jump. And this one is pretty flat. The flux is pretty flat.
So, well, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
You only use one point in the line profile, the stress profile, to get your transfer.
Yes, that's right. That's a limitation.
So, do you think if you had the full stress profile, I mean, you could do a better job of? I mean, would any of this?
I think I will, because first you probably can have a diagnosis of what's happening during the flare. The second is probably going to have more accurate measurement of the. Since this is like more than an hour after flare, we think the line profile probably won't change. I mean, here they change it, but from here to here, they probably don't change much.
You think that would affect the measurements of the angle? I could see.
Yeah, that's
just
what I was wondering.
Yeah, it might affect the measurements of the strength of the transverse field if the line profile changed. But I would think the Q and U
polarization
would be affected similarly.
Yeah, probably that's.
You'll get an angle that's.
The angle is weighted by the transverse field anyway.
That is true. That's it probably will affect, but we don't have that at this moment. And another flare, probably can. For this one, we run a movie, but we cannot identify the local area that got big change. So when we calculate flux, we calculate the whole field of view to just to see overall flux change. So probably.
In each of these is to some extent a two ribbon flare.
This is also a two ribbon flare.
Just
one of them didn't show. That one has the lowest of quality. That's why.
Yeah. What could you point to the ribbons? I guess.
This one is different from the other two ribbon. One ribbon is right here. Yeah, the other one is. So this is a little bit complicated two ribbon, but. It looks like one ribbon, those two I actually have same polarity, probably can see. This one has an opposite polarity. So it's more like two loop systems, one link like this, so the other like this. It's not a typical two ribbon, because the typical two ribbon, the other two events, you can see two ribbons are very close and then separated. For this one, they are already pretty far away in the beginning.
They didn't move much, did they?
Yeah, they didn't move much.
Yeah.
So I had an old paper, couple of years ago, I discussed those two different kind of flares. One kind of flare is a traditional one. You have two ribbons, start very close and then separating. That's a classical that reconnection model. Kupfer Newman's model, and something like this is more complicated. Looks like some interaction of the flux loops, so it's more complicated than Kupfer Newman's that reconnection model. And
see, the HL fiber direction changes a lot. Like if you look about 3/4 of the way up.
That changes.
So the arcade goes all the way around to the left, right? There's an arcade.
The arcade.
My left.
Your left.
That side.
This side. I think the arcade, for this one, I could not figure out very clearly. There are two arcade systems. One is connected to here. The other is a high one connecting to here.
I think actually you do see a classic two ribbon flare on the very top of the picture.
Yeah.
You can see.
Oh, the here?
Yeah, that's one ribbon.
Could you show which way you think the neutral line?
And then the other ribbon is up over on the left.
The neutral line.
Up towards the top of the picture. Is there a neutral line up there?
Right. There's a neutral line probably here. You see that separating, as George pointed out. Here it's more like a classical two ribbon. You have one ribbon moving this direction, the other ribbon moved to this direction. Okay.
So then I guess the question is, now I can clearly see those five will realign themselves.
Yeah, they're moving. Are they really coming out of
it? You're claiming they're moving closer to being parallel to the...
No, I and no, this one didn't see any change of the share. No, this is the one we didn't. I didn't say everyone. This one we don't see a change of the share. In the, since we concentrate on this one, here you don't have a measurement of transverse field. Yeah, right. Right, that's a good point. But unfortunately, our calculation is around here because there's a field, and here you don't have transverse signal. Right. Okay, hey, next. I'll probably skip this one. It's another. Okay, that's another one. Okay.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
But believe a lot, almost every X class flare you will have a halo CME.
As far as a comet? Okay.
Yeah. But this is a movie. You don't see much. It's a flare. That's transient. That's what I think. That's probably same kind of transient as what Kasovichov said. But you can see there's some expansion of this. Some.
You don't think that's really a Stokes V signal. You think it's
no.
Just intensity, right?
There's just an intensity here. Yeah. Right. Okay. So this one we have transverse field, but I were not sure because we checked the bars. We could not see any change in any place for this one. So maybe the next one will show the, I mean, only thing we saw the change is a line side of component. So this is negative again, but it's leading again. You can see there's some transient that's due to the emission. Then you can see leading polarity increase and the following polarity decrease slightly, basically within the error. Error bar, and again, this is a hard X-ray profile. So, I think this is another case that showed the leading flux increase and following flux decrease, but nothing changed in transverse. This is a one that's not didn't see any change in transverse field. Okay, and this is the last one. I don't think we have a movie. This one again. Very similar to one you saw, and we didn't have the data from Big Bear, so we used MDI data. So this is not H-alpha, that's a trace image to locate a flare. And this is pretty much a flare neutral line, and there's no transverse field measurement. So the next picture, or next view graph will show something you're familiar by now. Again, it's only line of sight. You only have the line of sight flux. And this is a leading flux increased after flare. And this foreign flux is dropped after flare. This largest drop. This is a drop in the one polarity. It's almost equivalent to increase the other polarity. So this is a key I discuss, since we don't have a uniform data from transverse field. So those shear increase or shear decrease or whatever is just some supporting thing we want to investigate. And the key for this study is for all the six events, we show some increase of the P flux in the line of sight measurement. Let's see what I think. I had two different explanations for probably different sets of data. So I think next is some explanation.
But always true that the total flux is lower right after the flare.
No, total flux will be net flux. Let's see. Total flux is always higher after flare or zero. In one case, it's zero. So what you can see, the total flux will be this, let's see, this subtract by this, right? Since this decrease, this increase.
So how do you square this with V equals zero?
Yeah, it won't. So I have some explanation like that.
I mean, it could easily be you could easily just explain it based on the fact that you're not looking at the vertical magnetic field. You're looking at the line of sight.
Yeah.
And given the fact that you see a change in the transverse angle.
Yeah, right.
What makes you think that you're not also seeing a change in the angle relative to the plane? Right?
It's, yeah, that's also the same magnetic that's
merge,
a good,
but it just changed its amount of how vertical it was.
Yeah. So, but we have one difficulty here. Yes, that's something we thought before. If you have a field, there's nothing change in the true field strength.
Right.
It's just a change just like this one. So if that's the case, then if that's the case, that change of the line of sight and transverse should reverse. That means if line of sight increase, transverse should decrease. Because you, but for we only have two cases. We have vector field. They increase at the same trend. When transverse increase and line of sight they also increase. So that looks like you have to put some new flux to explain.
Now, if you use that magnetic field vector and just calculate the vertical flux,
That's maybe we should do that next to get a true 3D vector.
Yeah.
So that, but anyway, this is all change. So I think the most surprising thing is this: why they pick up the positive flux to increase. But of course, it's only six cases. If you study more cases, if it's all, we don't know. If a P got some special treatment, then there's something we have to think why P flux increase and F flux decrease slightly or there's no change. And the change over time, it's between 10 and 100 minutes. Once they change, they permanently stay in that state. So this is just a first summary of the six events, and there are some other things associated with that, and this is also a summary of some transverse field observations. This is just the Stokes eye. There are three cases you obviously see the new sunspot. This will be trusted most because they just Stokes eye. They just watch to see if the new sunspot come out. There are three that do see the sunspot come out. And the transverse field, you put a question mark there since you still don't know how accurate that is. But certainly, so far we didn't see any case of a change of shear to decrease. So that's why we can say. Then we offer two explanations. That's two sets of cartoons and show next. The one is new flux emergence that requires to be shared inclined and also require the cancellation of new P flux with the existing F flux. And maybe we go to that first.
So maybe go to the next one?
Yeah, just go to, So this is a cartoon to show there are some existing F flux. Then this is the flux emergence. Then you have a viewing angle here. Then what you can see here is you will only see P flux. You don't see F flux if you only have a line of sight. Okay, and then this some P flux will cancel with the F flux. So overall, what you will see is some increase of the F flux, P flux, and some decrease of the F flux. That we wouldn't say transverse field observation supports this, but we didn't say there's no contradictory with the transverse flux. Then you will see some transverse flux because it's new.
So what about how does this change of transverse flux depend on where you are on the disk? I mean, is it the case that you don't get changes in the transverse flux when you're at the disk center, or
so if this is exactly at disk center, you will also see strong increase of transverse flux because this is new.
Okay. What about the flux imbalance thing?
if near the disk center, if it's exactly at the disk center, then you shouldn't see flux imbalance.
So
otherwise, but we don't have a region exactly at the disk center. So there are two angles. One is the view angle, the other is the inclination angle. When the view angle is greater than inclination angle, you can see the imbalance of flux. But if the view angle is smaller in the inclination angle, you should see both poles. That really depends on how flat this is. And if it's purely flat, like just like this, what you see, if it's near the disk center, you don't have any line of sight flux. You just have a transverse flux. Okay, the second explanation, that's just from the visual inspection of the movie, what I saw, got an impression. I extrapolated that somehow. Before the sun flare, the sunspot is more compact. After flare, it expanded a little bit. Not that much, somehow. So we have limitation in our measurement. We use a line, one line position. So we have a famous effect called a Zeeman saturation. When the sunspot is too strong, then your line spectrum, you don't get that slope. That means you are not measuring all the flux, you're missing some flux. When they expand, and you move some flux out of Zeeman saturation, some are still saturated, but some are not. So then this, because of expansion, then you got reconnection, some like this. So that also can explain some imbalance, the flux, we don't call it emergence, flux change, because you got some, the real flux really didn't change, you just got some flux moved out of Zeeman saturation, so you can measure more flux, and the other polarity, you're going to cancel some, you can decrease. So this is an observational effect. Even if it's an observational effect, it's quite interesting why the flare can cause sudden expansion of the sunspot. This is also physically important. I mean, at least it's an interesting question. So those are the two possible explanations. Okay, so I think the next is just the summary of the whole thing you saw before, so I don't repeat.
Don't you have the level of the flux, so you know whether the Zeeman saturation is occurring?
We know it occurred. There are some Zeeman saturation. We are not measuring all the flux, that's for sure. It usually occurs around like 2,500 Gauss in that order of magnitude. But it really depends on the instrument setting. Since I'm not that quite familiar with MDI, I don't know how much they're going to, what's the threshold for saturation. But for Big Bear, it's around 2,500 Gauss. We calculated with Dick Kemp before. So we know there's a saturation, but we cannot correct the saturation.
For MDI, it's quite low, I think.
It's quite low, so that can saturate more easily. So that's why the only data we had for MDI, I explained that as the sunspot expansion. That's probably due to the saturation. So this, but again, why there's a sudden expansion of a sunspot after flare? There's some explanation, like by James Chen. It's I think it's like the pinch current. I didn't understand that that release then caused the expansion of a sunspot. So that's all. Thank you.
I have two thoughts.
Yeah.
May I draw on the board?
Oh, okay.
Share a couple things. Warren Acton a few years ago. Warren Acton a few years ago told me that he had published some paper in the 70s. He looked down on the sun from the North Pole. He noticed that brightness in ultraviolet and X-ray got brighter on this side of the sun before something rotated around, and there was a dimming over here before something rotated off the disk. So the interpretation of his result was that X-ray arcades are skewed in the direction of rotation. The way that the sun rotates. So that implies that if it might be the case that then that the magnetic field is inclined like that, which would, I think,
depending on how things are connected, you know, if they...
At least a solar wind would look like that, right?
No, so
this is the other way around, okay.
So this is actually in-direction rotation, which is hard to understand, but if there is this inclination of loops, it might be the case that depending on the structure of the field, there might be a very different behavior to following, to proceeding and following polarity.
Actually, there is this well-known asymmetry that the leading polarity is shallower than the following
polarity.
If you were to draw that in, that's so you're saying that the angle is something like this, like beneath the surface of the sun, is that right?
Yeah, or at the surface. Even.
At the surface, yeah.
It's not
unreasonable to think that there isn't some very large difference between following and preceding polarities as your results suggest. Another thought I had was that if you were to emerge some new flux in your field of view, and that flux happened to be carrying a current, then you would
have a shear.
You would shear, and that would just be an artifact of the fact that you emerged.
Right. That's something we've been thinking. The new flux, there's no reason to. We know there's some studies that showing in a complicated flux reading, the new flux will carry current.
So it's not necessarily field restructuring in the corona or anything that's increasing shear per se, it might just be...
Yeah, just from below, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
So this extra flux is, we know the reconnection taking place. This has nothing to do with the corona?
No, it's just, that's why we think it comes from below.
This is way below.
It's very hard to see which triggers which in a solar flare. They're probably just a whole restructuring process,
I would think, the flare is the tail and not the dog.
No. Yeah.
So what? Why is the emergence being observed after the flare? Why there's no sign of the emergence before? If the emergence is what causing the flare, why isn't there any sign of the emergence of the flux before?
Is there any hope? If that were true, you're proposing, I think, something that is fairly radical, the idea that the emergence, that something crossing the photosphere is going to initiate a solar flare.
There are two ideas. One is like this, the emerging. We know that in some older observation, we know there's triggering of flare by flux emergence.
Mm-hmm.
That's by the flux cancellation, but that's different from here.
Yeah.
You have a new flux, then one pole of the new flux cancels the pole of the existing flux, then the neutral line. So if that there are a lot of observations. Suppose you have some flux already there, could be curved, could be straight. Then you have the positive, negative come out. Then you will have an interaction.
Right.
That could cause a two-ribbon flare, also can cause a jets. That's like Shibata's model, that energy release. So if that's not new. But what we found is...
How would the shear behave in this kind of...
In this kind of flare, could be no change.
No change in the shear.
Just to have some new flux come out, then you have this is positive or negative, then you would have some after flare, it would be something like that, right? Is this the picture? This is three positive, negative, positive. That's the jets will move like this. This could be a two ribbon flare.
I think, though, in most...
That's a compact flare.
Coronal flare models, one would expect a decrease in shear angle. If only because the coronal magnetic energy is related to the amount of non-potential field
in
the corona. And if a flare is releasing energy stored in the corona, you expect the coronal energy to go down.
Of course. So my question is... is that possible?
Field of flux actually has to do, but it may be actually anything correlated with the field
with the
cross field at the
flux
at the surface.
So
increase the shear. If you have arcade like this, and you move the foot points in this direction, mm-hmm. you start with a potential field, and you observe that initially you have a potential field. The field strength at the surface of the photosphere in this direction is zero initially, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then as you shear it, it increases.
Right.
As you shear it even more, it will start to decrease. As the field, the arcades expand, it will start to decrease. And actually, in the limit of very strong shear, this component of the field at the surface goes to zero.
So would you expect that?
Why if you are like this and very close, you see, the tip or they're going.
The field lines.
Because
expand.
Most of the trees, the actual.
Can you draw a picture? Okay.
It's not concentrated near the surface anymore, but
oh, it's way up there.
Way up there, where you don't see it.
Yeah. So that's a feature of the fact that if you shear, bring this out and this in, then the loop expands.
Right. Yeah.
And so if you look at the transverse component here and here, it actually could be. I'm not sure. But it could be smaller in this case than in this case.
Yes.
Is that true?
Oh.
Because most of the axial flux will be concentrated here.
In
the top region. Hmm.
But, okay.
There is a paper by Melrose. Actually, that's before our observations are done. He predicted the photospheric magnetic shear has to increase after flare. And that paper is based on so-called a drop of the current. He used, I don't understand paper very much, but basic idea is he used those DC current to describe the corona loop system. And in his calculation, he saw, from the model, those DC current could drop to the photosphere after flare. So, but anyway, the first thing is we're talking about a point is triggering. That may not be the case. The other thing is it's not a triggering, it's just a consequence. But I discussed it with a number of people, but it doesn't look like it's physical. My idea was, CME and flare, there's a very messy energy got released in the upper atmosphere. So that where make it easier for whatever sitting in the boundary to just come up a little bit. So that means this new flux emergence or new flux you see is just a consequence of CME or flare. I don't know which one is primary. It could be the flare secondary. But anyway, you just have a lot of energy you got rid of. And there's a restructuring in the upper atmosphere. But the problem with this explanation is the density. It's so big a difference in the density in the corona in the photosphere. So what happened in the higher up, because its density is so low, it probably doesn't have much to do with below. But there's a magnetic field. I don't know how the...
Now, when you see emergence of a new active region, you see some characteristic signatures in H-alpha. You see arch filament systems, things like this that indicate that flux has emerged in the way you just drew on the board. When you see a new bipolar active region emerge along the new.
That's difficult. We didn't see arch filament.
Well, I was going to, but under standard flux emergence.
Yeah, you see the right.
And I was going to ask you, do you see any?
We just see in the white light. We see those new penumbra just formed.
Right. You don't see any H-alpha.
No, we don't see H-alpha.
Anything that looks like it's
that's in a puzzle. It doesn't. You know, arch filament is very prominent. They're not only is dark in between, also bright but we don't see this kind of thing in H-alpha. So it's certainly not the traditional EFR.
Right. I mean, is there any reason you'd expect that the emerging flux here would look different than a...
I don't know if... It could be a, yeah.
I mean, you also see, I guess it's hard to disentangle it from the blue shifts and red shifts you see from the flares. But in emerging flux, you see, you know, some
That's actually a good question. From, yeah, right. From the we probably should, I think, our next thing, get the MDI Doppler grants to see if we can see those red shift or blue shift.
I think one of the most important things you have to do is use the full magnetic field vector.
Yeah, right. To construct the photo.
So you were saying most of the flares, you see emergence of the flux maybe and then cancellation or annihilation of the flare.
Yeah.
But in this X flares, which have CME associated with it, essentially maybe you don't see the initial emergence of the flux and the flare trigger, and afterwards you see it, or?
Yeah, I mean, what I mean is typically we see the flare, this is a compact flare,
yeah,
with the flare ribbon is between the new flux and the older flux.
There's no CME.
And for this kind of picture, usually there's no CME, the compact flare. And this one, the flare ribbon is between this one and this one. It's different from the EFR-related flare. EFR-related flare, you see the ribbon like this, but this one you see just a bit. In the EFR, it's very hard to see the flare ribbon come out from 2 foot point of this EFR. It's always a cancellation with the other existing component of the field.
I want to ask Dana a question. What's if I emerge some flux into an active region that's there, I'm going to be essentially emerging, bringing out two new sources.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have nulls, so you're going to have separators and separate matrices.
Yeah.
So what's the, I don't think that would be sort of ideal conditions for magnetic restructuring leading to reconnection, leading to a flare. Why, what's your, so this emerging flux initiation for flares seems to make total sense in the models that I've heard you advocate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions for Hanin? Okay,
thank you.